We doing?
Doing well, thank you. We've got some folks in the boardroom today, including our guests from the Inspector General's office.
All right. I'm sorry, I'm not there. Kind of hard for me to get back and forth when you have a 1 o'clock. Everybody knows that struggle.
We completely understand, which is why we have the hybrid option. It's working well.
I personally love it. If we're all here, Karen says we have a quorum. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Erin. How are you?
Good. We'll get started. It's
Okay.
noon on the dot. Call to order. Any public comment today? Any public comment? Asking a third time. Anybody here to talk to us? Great. That session is closed. We'll move on to the approval of the minutes from May 25th, 2022. It's been a while. Hope everybody had a wonderful summer.
So moved, Lori Spielman.
Second, John Coleman.
You heard it, Lori and John. Any changes, anything like that? Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion carries. We'll move right into our presentation and updates today with a special presentation from the Connecticut Inspector General, Robert Devlin Jr., on the use of deadly force, police shootings, and in-custody police deaths. Mr. Devlin,
Great. Well, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to address you today. My name is Robert Devlin. I'm a Connecticut Inspector General. Let me tell you a little bit about myself and about the people that work in my office. So I've had this job for about a year. I was appointed last fall. And before that, I served as a judge in Connecticut for 28 years. For 26 of those, I worked in the Superior Court on criminal cases around our state. And for the last couple of years of my judicial career, I served on the Connecticut Appellate Court hearing appeals. And I've taken this job, as I said, as of fall of last year. We've been at it for about a year. With me today are a number of members of my staff, Andrew Schlitt, an assistant state's attorney. He's over in the office, and R.A. Cintron, Stephen Hunt, Frank Capozzi. They are all former police officers, high-ranking police officers in various departments, and they act as inspectors in our office. We have a number of other law enforcement people that work in the office assisting us in our investigations. So the Office of Inspector General came into the law as part of the Police Accountability Act. That was passed by the General Assembly in 2020. It was amended in 2021. And basically, this office replaced an earlier sort of way in which Connecticut investigated police-involved shootings, which involved the state's attorneys. They would be the lead sort of lawyers in investigating officer-involved shootings. That was substituted for our office as of, as amended 2021. We basically look at three sorts of cases. One are incidents where a police officer uses force and someone dies, or a police officer uses deadly force regardless of the outcome. And in those cases, our job is to investigate to determine whether or not the police use of force was justified under the law. The second category of cases involves in-custody deaths. These are people that die in the custody of a police agency or in the Department of Correction. And there, our job is to look into the circumstances of these in-custody deaths to determine if there's any criminal action that was associated with the person's death. And finally, the third sort of category are instances where a police officer fails to intervene in a circumstance where another police officer is using excessive force. Under the Police Accountability Act, there's an obligation that are placed on police officers to not just stand by when another police officer is obviously using excessive force, but to intervene to try to ameliorate the situation. And so we inherited nine cases that were under investigation when the office came into existence. And since then, we have acquired six additional cases. And these are officer-involved shooting cases. And we've also had a number of in-custody deaths. So we have two under investigation now. We have two people who died in the custody of police agencies, one in Norwich and one in Manchester. And we have about 60 plus people who have died in the Department of Correction in the year 2023. Most of those people in the DOC, they died of natural causes. People, you know, acquire illnesses like everyone does outside, and they succumb to those illnesses in prison. But we also have cases involving suicides, involving drug overdoses in death in jail, and we are investigating those. We've issued 6 reports in connection with this matter. We brought one case to court in connection with the case that we've looked at, and we've sort of are in the process of sort of fine-tuning our investigative skills as it applies to these actually quite challenging cases. So one feature of these cases is that when they have particularly an officer-involved shooting, and particularly an officer-involved shooting that results in a fatality, those cases generate instant and intense media interest. They just do. They're going to generate instant and intense media interest. And as the chief executives in your municipalities, you and the chief of police in your towns are going to be asked questions about these incidents. And they're going to be immediate and they're going to be intense. What we're trying to do, one reason why I'm talking to these cogs around the state is to hopefully persuade you, after making maybe a brief statement about the incident, is to refer media inquiries to our office. To say, look, this matters by statute under the investigational power of the Office of Inspector General, and we're referring all sort of media inquiries to that office. What we're trying to avoid is that sort of disaster that happened down in Uvalde, Texas, where you had all these different people talking to the media, the messages were confused, they were conflicting, and reflected badly on the whole situation there. Our objective would be obviously to follow the law. We have now statutes that mandate the release of body-worn cameras and other sort of digital evidence in certain timeframes, but also to be as transparent as we possibly can connected with these matters and to keep the media advised without compromising the investigation. So it's this sort of balancing act of being transparent, which is important, particularly in these cases, very important. But at the same time, we need to preserve the integrity of these investigations so that we can achieve a complete, thorough, and accurate investigation that supports, you know, whatever conclusion that we end up making. So I really would ask your cooperation in that regard. If something happens in your community, hopefully it won't, but if something does, that you will refer media inquiries to our office, and we will take care of that. You know, a couple of things that have struck me about this work, I've never been a police officer. And I respect police officers, and I respect the important role that they play in our communities. But I've never worked in that law enforcement field. I would say, like I said, a judge for a long time, and before that, a federal prosecutor, and before that, a state prosecutor. So I've had plenty of contact with law enforcement in my career, but not as a police officer. But what has sort of surprised me a bit is the fact of, in the work that we've done, we're seeing a fair number of cases involve suicide by cop. This is this phenomenon that's recognized where people who are, you know, in a very depressed state, who are sort of suffering from some serious, you know, mental infirmity, and come to the conclusion that they want to take their own lives, but they can't quite do it. They can't quite, you know, take the next step themselves. And so they embark upon these situations where they try to provoke police officers to do it for them. The FBI estimates that about 30% of all officer-involved shootings and involved fatalities are suicide by cop. That's a lot. Seems to be a lot. And we're seeing that in Connecticut. I mean, one of the reports that we issued came out of Hartford, and it was a clear-cut case of suicide by cop, and one that was, you know, after the fact, apparent, but certainly not apparent to the officers who were involved in that situation, not even close. The FBI has done a fair amount of work on that. They've done some papers that they put out. And in the recommendation sections of our reports, we have an opportunity to make recommendations for maybe policy changes or maybe some training areas that might bear fruit. And I've recommended that maybe some of these papers that the FBI has put out might be something that Post and other training officers might take into account, because I think it's a worthwhile area to explore. Because if you can create a situation, which the Harper situation was not, but if you can create a situation where the officer is safe, the subject is in a safe situation, the controlled situation, the public is safe, There's a number of techniques you can utilize to try and sort of talk the person down from their sort of extreme state and see if you can create a situation where people go home. That's which is the ultimate objective. So, you know, thank you very much for your attention. I just wanted to come here and give you sort of a snapshot of what we're doing. But I would invite any questions or comments that you have. We have our staff here, myself, we have to try and answer them as best we can.
Thank you.
Sure.
Now back to you, Mayor, if there are any questions for Mr. Devlin.
Sorry, I'm here. I was stuffing my face listening to you, and I think you guys needed to see that. I think we have a question from Pete in Windsor. Hey, Pete.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Inspector General. Question, is there any in statutory language that as a time frame which you need to complete your investigations?
There's no statutory time frame, but what we've adopted is informally, and this is sometimes aspirational instead of an absolute lock, but you know, judges, when I was a judge, I had 120 days to render a decision. That's the law in Connecticut. You have 120 days from the time that the case is completely presented to you to make a decision. And so we use that as a benchmark, 120 days from the completion of the investigation for us to issue a report. You know, another thing that's sort of apparent to me as I get into this work, we have a few bottlenecks that sometimes tend to slow things down. And part of it is the science, you know, the scientific analysis of some of the evidence that's seen in these cases takes a while to completely have the analysis done, report prepared. And so we need to wait on that. But as an aspirational sort of time limit, we try to get these reports out 120 days as from the completion of the investigation. And I realize that historically, these investigations have taken quite a while to generate. I know that's created some, I think, anxiety in the parts of police departments where they have to take an officer, maybe put that officer on some sort of administrative duty. But we're trying to address that by getting the reports out as soon as we can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So of the three charges that your office has, it seems to me like the in-custody deaths in local PDs or DOC is probably the most prevalent. But how many cases a year are, with the limited experience you've had, how many cases are you seeing on an annual basis?
Of what type?
But in total.
Well, I think when they set up the office and sized it, they expected to see about 15 cases of officer-involved use of force that result in a fatality or deadly force a year. So that's, I think they use that as sort of an estimate. In terms of the in-custody deaths, you know, I'm not sure about that. I actually, with respect to the DOC ones, there's a fair number of those, but many of those are straightforward in the sense that the person just died of natural causes. The other ones I think are more challenging. I'm going to do an annual report at the end of each year of our operation. And so I think over time, we'll get a much better sense of just exactly how many of these cases we do have and sort of what the nature of them are. I don't think that that has actually been collected in that way. So we're sort of working this as we go through it.
Thank you.
Do we have a sense of what the total number of law enforcement officers are in the state of Connecticut when you add in the state police and local?
I think we have ourselves as an Inspector General's office spoken to 100 police departments in Connecticut already. And state police, maybe Inspector Hunt, can you help us out
there? I believe the number is a little bit over 10,000 that are certified police officers, including state troopers in the state of Connecticut. But as the judge said, we visited over 100 police departments, spoken with many of your departments here in the room to kind of tell them who we were and what to expect if an investigation commences and how to go about notifying us. So we've spoken to a lot of your chiefs already and established those open communications.
True. Yes, we've also reached out to a lot of community leaders, the NAACP. We've spoken at a lot of community organizations around the state, we had good conversations with them along the same lines as with the police departments. You know, we are a new agency. We are here. This is our statutory jurisdiction. Here's how we're going about our work. Here's our sort of intent with respect to public release of information. And we've well received, respectfully received, great interest by the community groups that we've reached out to as well. So we're trying to kind of have a balanced approach on this.
And if I guess that, if you have any community groups that are wanting to be with us, at least contact us so we know. We've reached out to a lot, but sometimes, you know, with summer it was hard. But you guys are the town managers. If you have any groups that you want us to meet with us, please contact our office and we will make those arrangements.
Any other questions?
I don't see any other questions, Mayor.
I don't see any in the chat box. So we'll move on. Thank you guys very much for being with us today. Appreciate the information.
Thank you very much, Judge.
And Matt, we'll move on to our updates.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. So we've got everything consolidated, all the monthly reports consolidated in one PowerPoint. And I would ask staff to advance the slide. Thank you. And Mayor, I'll move through this expeditiously, but periodically just pause and ask others, such as John Coleman, if they want to add anything. So first of all, under my report, it's that time of year again where we appoint an ad hoc legislative committee to prepare an agenda for the policy board's review and approval. So we're going to work to develop something for your review in January. I sent out an invitation calling for volunteers and we got a tremendous response. First Selectman Bauza here to my left, Jason, you know, he led this effort last year and he's agreed to do that again. And you can see here all the members that have volunteered from across the region. I think it's a good representative group based on, again, the geographic spread across the region and type of community. In addition to Jason, we've got John L. Susser from Coventry, Wendy Maxtudis from Simsbury, Lisa Murata from Rocky Hill, Mike Picaro from Vernon, Laurie Spielman from Ellington, Steve Stefanu from Manchester, Dave Stuber, representing the city of Hartford, Mayor Walsh from East Hartford, and Brock Weber from New Britain. So my thanks to those who volunteered for this task. We will be reaching out to all of you to organize a couple of meetings. And again, Mayor, we'll plan to present a draft to the board for your review in January. Moving on, next item, strategic planning. As I talked about a couple months ago, you know, just starting here in my role, I wanted to have an opportunity to work with the board and our staff team to develop a set of goals for the next 3 to 5 years. And we're also going to use this opportunity really to refine our organizational values, our mission, and our vision. So this past summer, we did issue an RFQ, and we're reviewing responses right now because we want to bring on a trained facilitator to assist with this. We're going to start at the staff level, and then we will engage the board, most likely in a board retreat, and we will work to do this before you all get into budget season. Yeah, we'll be mindful of that. Next slide, please. Mayor, I want to thank you, and I'm sure you're going to want to touch on this as well. We're going to have a social event for the board tomorrow from 3:30 to 5:30 at Alvarium Beer Company in New Britain, and would like to thank the mayor for hosting and organizing this event. You know, this should be a good opportunity. We've got many new board members for us to get to know one another.
Yeah, I'll just touch on that, Matt, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead.
I sent emails out to everybody. It looks like we're going to have a really good crowd. We called Alvarium, gave them a heads up. I mean, it's really no pressure. It's just to kind of see everybody face to face in a social setting and have a beer or whatever you might drink. They have coffee there too, just to get everybody together. And it's good to do that. So I'm hopeful that I'll see everyone tomorrow, 3:30 to 5:30. It's on John Downey Drive in New Britain. It's on the New Britain and Newington town line. So please come.
Thanks very much, Mayor. And this is something the mayor and I want to experiment with, just another opportunity for people to get to know one another. So continuing in that vein, we're also hosting a tour of Riverfront Recapture for the board. And we're specifically going to be looking at the new Riverfront Park and Riverwalk on the Hartford-Windsor line. And this tour we're going to hold from 2 to 4 p.m. on October 12th. So we're going to meet at on location at 100 Meadow Road. Please wear appropriate footwear for the event. And I'd like to thank Mike Cipriano and Kim Bona from our staff for organizing this. Municipal Services Committee, we're going to have a dedicated municipal services slide a couple down the line here, but we're going to hold our next meeting at noon on October 18th. Among other things, we're going to be discussing regional approaches to stormwater. Peter Souza, the committee chair, and I want to kick off this conversation. I know that's a significant issue for many of our towns. Really want to encourage everyone to attend. And more importantly, I think it's very beneficial for each and every town to assign someone to cover the Municipal Services Committee. You know, this is where we're having a lot of conversations about new services and emerging issues. So please assign someone to that committee if you haven't already. And of course, you're always welcome to come. We prefer to have a decision maker, but if you can't make it, please send a senior person. Next item, Advancing Women in Transportation. That's a national organization with a Connecticut chapter. On October 6th, they're gonna be hosting a day-long event, and CROG staff and I will be participating, and we'll be talking about a number of good transportation-related projects. Town visits, I am getting out and about. I'm trying to visit the legislative bodies for each of our towns just to provide a brief report on our activities and to take questions and suggestions from our members. If I haven't reached out to you already, I will be soon. And I'm also planning to join our community development staff, and I want to thank Kyle Scheel for setting this up, as we're going to be going out to visit local planning staff and economic development staff from around the region as well. And these visits will just really enable us to touch base with our members and help us serve you better. Next slide, please. A new staff, so next item, we're going to report on the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, IIJA. Extremely, probably a once in a generation opportunity here that we do not want to squander. So I appreciate the board's support for adding a couple of dedicated positions to our team. And very pleased to introduce Elizabeth Sanderson here to my right and Kyle Shields from across the table. They've joined us. Elizabeth is serving as our BIL coordinator, principal program manager. Kyle also has some BIL responsibilities, and he's also working in the area of community development as a principal planner. And both of them come with great experience, and we're really fortunate to have them here on our team.
I don't approve of this.
Yeah. Yeah, Steve took one for the team, so to speak. So Steve and Kasia, we appreciate that.
Great hire.
Thank you. In terms of our engagement and outreach, how we're planning to approach this, a couple different things. Number one, we've developed a dedicated webpage, and it's located on our website. We're also providing an update at all of our transportation and municipal services committee meetings, and we're gonna organize a workshop for each and every funding opportunity. Now, for these funding opportunities, sometimes only a handful of our towns are eligible. In other cases, it's all or a majority of our towns. So, you know, we're working hard to get the word out and work creatively with everyone, and appreciate any input you might have in terms of how we can improve in this regard. Very pleased to announce that we did submit a couple of applications under the Safe Streets for All program, the first initiative. One of the first initiatives under the BIL. And two applications. One is roughly $600,000 to update our regional transportation safety plan. And the safety plan is essential for applications under this program. And then we also worked with the town of Farmington and four other of our towns to submit a $22.5 million application for transportation related projects across our region. And I really want to thank Russ Arnold and the other members of the town of Farmington team for stepping up to serve as the lead applicant for this initial application. So great job there. And we're looking forward to a favorable response from the state and then the feds. Reconnecting communities, we're working on this one now. It's a smaller number of communities. Is it roughly eight, Kyle? Eight or nine that are eligible for this grant. So we're working with them now, particularly the city of Hartford, to submit an application under this program. So these are gonna come fast and furious, folks. Again, it's going to be a five-year opportunity, and we're here to help you, and we're going to be reaching out on a regular basis. Next slide, please. So now this is the municipal services slide. The only thing I want to highlight before I turn to Peter Souza, our waste management project that we have underway. Staff, Pauline and I, we're reviewing the draft phase one report we received from our consulting firm, and we're going to be sharing that report with our project steering committee at its next meeting. Peter, not sure if you wanted to add anything here.
I don't have anything to add except for one item, which is the October 16th deadline for gasoline bids. Just want to make sure everyone is aware of that, because this is a no piggyback bid. So quantities to Kim Bona by October 16th.
Thank you, Peter. Next slide, please. So moving on to planning, we've got two areas here, community development. I'll turn to Rob just to hit some quick highlights here, and then we'll move on to Mr. Coleman.
Yeah, community development. We, as Matt said, we have a few new faces in community development, including some of our IJA staff are working also on community development issues, including our upcoming update of our regional plan of conservation and development. We also have been conducting bike ped counts around the region, and that effort is ongoing every fall. And so we're that's underway. We participated in a sustainable CT certification review cycle, which is towns that wish to get certification review for sustainability. We participate in that ranking cycle and evaluation. And we're entering our fifth year of our state physical activity and nutrition SPAN grant program, which is the final year of the opportunity, but may extend into additional years. But there are opportunities for communities to apply through us for active transportation grants, specifically demonstration projects, which are temporary projects on roadways to advance active transportation. So those are some of the main highlights in community development.
Thank you, Rob. Next slide, please. We'll just take questions at the end. We're almost there. So now moving on to transportation. Transportation Committee met earlier this week, and a number of items on today's agenda were approved by the committee. I'd like to ask Mr. Coleman if there's anything he'd like to add.
Thank you, Matt. Just one thing on the lot set selection policy. We tabled that item until our next meeting, because as I'm sure all of you are aware, lots of is being challenged with increasing material costs, transportation costs, and all the other costs related to the projects. And we are going to have a special meeting of the subcommittee to see if we need to consider modifying the cap costs on that are applied by LOTSIP on a town-by-town basis for total projects, and also raise the unit costs for the individual materials that go into the projects. We intend to achieve that analysis by our meeting in October, and we do not believe it will cause any delay in the solicitation project, but we think it's important that you know that your folks are taking a good hard look at it, and costs are having a very direct impact on the LOTSIP program, which, as we all know, is the major local funding program for our local transportation projects. And just as an aside, Mayor Stewart, I apologize, but I will not be able to join you at your beer fest tomorrow. I have a conflict that I'm unable to revive. So enjoy. I will miss being there.
Thank you, Jim.
I'll have an extra one for you.
Thank you.
Next slide, please. All right, our last staff report. Last but certainly not least, all the great work going on in public safety. Cheryl Assis, can you quickly hit the highlights here?
I'm sure. I think the biggest highlight on this is that we are hosting our first regional CERT basic training class, and I think this is the first in the state. But what we've done is we're hosting it at CROG in the boardroom on Thursday evenings, where folks from any CERT town team can come in and get the basic training there and then return to their home team. It just makes it a lot easier for the communities so they don't have to have as many training sessions. And we're hoping to do this twice a year. The other
Oh, go ahead, Cheryl. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Just the other item that I would highlight is our cybersecurity tabletop exercise. We recently hosted that where many of your IT directors attended a tabletop exercise at our regional coordination center in Manchester. And I thought that went very well.
Very good. And then the only other item I have, Mayor, I meant to mention it earlier on, good news regarding our health insurance renewal for CROG staff. Our renewal year is September 1st, and we did realize a 10% savings by moving to the state's MEHIP program, better coverage for our employees and a reduced cost for the employer. So that completes our report. Appreciate your indulgence and happy to take any questions that members may have, Mayor.
Thank you guys very much. Are there any questions? I don't see any, so then we'll move along. Kathy here to give us our legislative update.
Hi, folks. There is really very, very little going on. It's election year for everyone, and we've about 6 weeks left till election day. So there are very few even committee meetings being held at the Capitol. I know it had come up the last time. There is still no decision or even conversation at this point that we're aware of on how open the session will be. The buildings are still technically partially closed. The first floor only in the LOB and two floors in the Capitol, and that has not changed. So we're waiting to hear about that. Folks that have a lot of seniority and are fairly comfortable under re-elections are working on proposing where they want to serve on committees or committee chairs, chairmanships. So a lot will, there will be a lot of changes post-election day. But right now, not much is happening in Hartford. It's all happening back home.
What is it, 40 days to go?
Yes. Yeah.
Who's exactly counting? No, not any of us.
I'm sure they all are.
All right. Thanks very much, Kathy. We'll move on to our action items today. Kim, you've got resolution 7.
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. So at the end of May, CROG put out an RFP for budget software per the request of some of our towns. We received a total of 5 proposals. 2 were eliminated upon review, and the other 3 were interviewed by CROG staff and municipal finance directors. They provided demos. Upon completion of the demos and interviews, it was unanimously decided and recommended that ClearGov be the selected vendor for budget software. So in front of you today, you'll find a resolution requesting authorization for CROG to enter into a contract with ClearGov for budget software.
All right, do I have a motion? And a second?
Second, Bob Bessel.
Bob, any questions on this? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Motion carries. Number 8, Maureen.
Hello. So this resolution is to approve an agreement with Circa to provide funds for a Resilient 2.0 Connecticut program. This is related to our regional natural hazard mitigation plan update. With Resilient 2.0, Circa is doing public engagement on the subject. They have gifted us with $40,000 to do the public engagement part of this program. We're in the process of planning to update our regional natural hazard mitigation plan. We are waiting for an earmark from Senator Murphy's office to actually be received by CROG to begin that work, but we are going to begin the Resilient 2.0, which is aligned with the Regional Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan. So does anyone have any questions?
See none.
Okay.
I'll entertain a motion and a second.
So moved, Lisa Thomas Coventry.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, John. Maureen, thank you very much. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item 9 today, back to Cheryl.
Thanks, Mayor. This is a resolution for our FY 2022 Homeland Security Funds, and it allows Matt to submit our program application to the State Department of Emergency Management and Homeland Security and enter into MOAs with each of our towns. The project funding is about $420,000 and includes several line items like training and exercise, sustainment, maintenance of regional equipment, contractual services, and then there's a couple set asides for the bomb squad, hazmat team, and protection of soft targets.
Does anyone have any questions? Do I have a motion and a second?
So moved, Lori Spielman.
Second, Bob Bessel.
Thank you, guys. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And then Cheryl, number 10.
Sure. This is a resolution for funding for our Capital Region Medical Reserve Corps unit, and it'll be funding to train all of them on CPR, first aid, stop the bleed, and some more advanced medical classes. It's just over $22,000, and it'll be provided by Yale, who is the fiduciary agent for the State Healthcare Coalition.
Thank you so much. Any other questions? A motion?
So moved, John Coleman.
Second, Lori Spielman.
Thank you, guys. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We'll move on to our MPO items. And John, this is all you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The first item, number 11, is the TIP amendments. There are a bunch of them. None of them take any money from our region. The Transportation Committee has approved them all and unanimously and recommend same to the board. I'd be happy to answer any questions on the specific ones, if so necessary, but otherwise would not go into detail unless you so request, Madam Mayor.
Nobody has any questions. I'm all set.
I would then move adoption, Madam Mayor.
Do I have a second?
Second, Eric Anderson.
Any questions or comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Number 12.
Number 12 is a resolution to endorse the Transit Priorities Corridor Study. This was a study that began in December 2020 and was aimed at developing transit and corridors, particularly for the Metro Hartford Rapid Routes. The City of Hartford and the Town of East Hartford have both endorsed the study's recommendation, and the Policy and the Transportation Committee has also endorsed the recommendations and recommends same to the Policy Board, and I would so move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Number 13. Aye.
Number 13 is the annual Unified Work Program, which basically lays out all of the work activities that are funded by the federal government through the state to CROG that are undertaken by our superb transportation and community development staff here at CROG. An annual thing that we do, we have to report it to the state and the feds on a regular basis. Staff has recommended approval. The Transportation Committee has endorsed and recommends approval, and I would so move.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much, John. Back to you, Matt, for I've got a handout today.
Yes, just one communication, Mayor. This is a copy of a letter we submitted in support of the Connecticut Education Network's application for middle mile grant funding under the bipartisan infrastructure law. And we'll routinely do this. We'll submit letters of support and we request the same in response to various no posts. So we were very happy to support this one.
Great, thank you. Is there any other business anybody or members need to discuss today? All right.
No other items from staff, Mayor.
Will we adjourn, Madam Mayor?
We're adjourned. It's 12:39 p.m. I'll see you guys tomorrow at Alvarium.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank
bye,
you,
everybody.
Everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, Mayor.
Bye-bye, guys.